This is the third podcast we're uploading that I did while we were out on Motorhead's motorboat cruise ship that sailed from Miami through Key West and Cozumel, Mexico, and then back again. When you think of a cruise ship, even when it's under the Motorhead banner, all the accoutrements are present. Pina coladas, beaches, sunshine, Margaritavilles, etc., etc. But for me, the only thing that I'm there to experience on a Motorhead cruise ship is Motorhead. Privately, I've been called the Great Indoorsman, and it's been meant as an insult, but I'm quite flattered by the tag, and now wear it as my shield. I do not like the outdoors. I do not like the sun and the surf. I was born with a natural tan, so I prefer to stay inside. No matter how rock and roll is portrayed in movies and in television, listened to with sunglasses on and a smile, shoulder to shoulder, engaging in sing-alongs, or while cruising down the freeway in a convertible, I've always thought of rock and roll as a very solitary pastime, done alone, in one's room, and used as a means of escape. Even watching a band in a live setting, I prefer to focus my attention on the stage, and I truly get annoyed when someone innocently bumps into me while the performance is taking place. So this past September, when we were booked to play on Motorhead's motorboat cruise, I was both excited to be playing but also trying to figure out what I'd do with all the downtime. See, I'm not exactly the cruise ship type. Thankfully, I was a huge fan of the other bands booked to play, but then what? Well, as luck would have it, we managed to bring out our good friends Josh and Jason Diamond, the Diamond Brothers, to film our time on the ship and the general hijinks that would be happening. It would also provide great hang time. Hanging out with the Diamonds has always made time fly by. Now, the Diamonds directed our trilogy of music videos for our Below the Belt album, which was released in 2010. Those videos created quite a stir when Elijah Wood, Ralph Macchio, Selma Blair, Jenna Malone, Don Jameson, Mike Watt, and Lemmy Kilmister all agreed to appear in the videos, later consolidated into the short film entitled The Ballad of Danko Jones. The Diamonds also directed our Just a Beautiful Day and I Believed in God videos for our Rock and Roll is Black and Blue album, as well as our 2012 documentary film Bring on the Mountain. Basically, we've worked quite a bit together over the years, and while maintaining a productive working relationship, a lot of why we keep working with them is because we like hanging out with each other. The Diamonds were also in a band called Puny Human, and I sung on their Universal Freakout album on Small Stone Records from 2007. We also played together a few times when we'd go down to New York City. So, locked on a boat together with nothing but time on our hands, it was a no-brainer that we needed to sit down and record this podcast episode. Please keep in mind, the low hum you hear in the background isn't my technical bungling, but rather the cruise ship's constant hum that you need to get used to immediately when you board a boat. However, nothing changes here. The conversation on this podcast episode is an exacting sample of what we are like together off the mic. Similar conversations like the one you're about to hear have been had with these guys over and over again under different conditions in different scenarios. If you were to take a sample of the conversation we had later that evening at dinner, it would have been exactly the same as this one. Basically, it's talking about bands and trading stories about them bands, recommending to each other albums by these bands, etc., etc. There's a part in this episode where I hesitated to keep, and only because it sounded so much like a private conversation rather than something inclusionary. But I opted to leave it in because this is how we talk, just nonstop talk about bands and new bands, band after band after band, and more bands. Thank you to Skullcandy Headphones for providing the podcast with the much-needed headphone gear. I use their aviator headphones constantly. And also thank you to Blue Mic Microphones for providing the Yeti mics we use and that I cart around everywhere I go in order to record these podcasts in the craziest of locations, this one being out at sea somewhere between Florida and Mexico. Also, I really do read the comments that people leave on iTunes and SoundCloud and appreciate the positive ratings in the different iTunes stores around the world. Thank you if you've left a comment or if you've left a rating regarding the podcast. I sincerely appreciate it. You know, I do these podcasts at my place. I do these intros in my room. One of the reasons why I started doing this podcast in the first place was because I'm just not that social a person. I'm not a social butterfly in the least. And I started to notice that I was becoming a hermit when I would get off tour. So doing the podcast is kind of my way to stem all that. Of course, doing it in the comfortable setting of my place with my friends and people I'm comfortable with or that I'm a fan of now creates the impression that I am a social butterfly. I know there have been people who have listened to this podcast and met me after a show or something and couldn't put the voice with the person in front of them. I'm no stranger to this reaction. I've been getting this for years when people meet me off stage. And if I had a dime for every time someone told me, "You're different off stage," I'd be a fucking millionaire by now. Listen, on stage and in my bedroom are two places I am very comfortable being in, if not the most comfortable anywhere in the world. So any other place other than my bedroom and being on stage, not so comfortable. I'm not so comfortable. And I only address this because I did recently read a comment someone left. It was a flattering comment, but it stated their impression of me was different than they had anticipated. You know, people might think that there's some kind of persona that's being put on here, and I can understand that impression. However, in my head, in my world, there isn't. I hope this podcast gives you a better glimpse of that. Anyways, here's a good example of just that. It's with two people I'm very comfortable with, the Diamond Brothers, Josh and Jason Diamond. They're this episode's guests on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's go-up, download for free. I'm so glad I like to sometime. Jimmy in from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down, down. I got half that burp on. Well, I mean, a lot of people who have heard your names know it from the video trilogy we did for our Below the Belt album. You guys did all the videos with all the stars, Ralph Macchio, Elijah Wood, Selma Blair, Jenna Malone, Lemmy, of course.
Of course.
The tie-in to the motorboat.
Yeah.
But not a lot of people know the story. How did we even meet? I mean, and it's a very natural way we met.
Well, we're in a band called Puny Human, and we've been a band since 1999, and our drummer at the time was on MTV, and
Ian Robinson,
and he...
Yeah, but wait, even before that, through friends in Boston...
Well, that's how we heard of Danko Jones.
But that's why we got in touch with you, is because through our friends in Only Living Witness in Boston.
Through Jonah Jenkins
and Mario Travers and all those guys played us your 7 inches, I think. And we were like, whoa, these
It was the record
awesome.
It was the record Sugar Chocolate with the
EP.
Gold sparkle drum on it.
That makes sense, because we had some good shows in Boston in the late 90s with the Turks.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, so we knew of you for years.
Right.
And once Ian had gotten on MTV and had been given a certain amount of power to sort of, you know, be the rock guy and whatever.
Expose people to music,
you know. Naturally, you go to either bands you like or bands you're friends with. And, you know, we've been friends with the Fireball guys since... Fireball Ministry guys since the late 90s and had been fans of yours, and so Ian wanted to give exposure to bands
right when Born a Lion came out, and I think he reached out to you guys and said, "Hey, check out our band and we're friends and maybe I can get you guys some exposure."
I think it was even before that, around that time. I think I read an interview and he name dropped us, and someone either I found it or someone else let us know, and that's when I started to get everything on the radar. And I was like, holy shit, there's someone on MTV who's talking about us. What?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Being from Canada, we don't get MTV.
Right.
But we know it as this kind of huge thing.
The monolith. Especially in the late 90s, early
2000s. It was an actual thing.
The height of their power, for sure.
Yeah.
So then when we played the Mercury Room, Mercury Lounge, like
no, we saw you at Continental. That show was packed, though.
That was the CMJ show.
Yeah,
yeah, I think it was that. Yeah. And then you know things. Yeah,
I'm like, and I remember. I mean, that's when we would still look in the Village Voice every week and be like, "Who's playing?" You know, and look, and we're like, "Oh fuck,
what's Danko's the internet
playing?" Yeah. Yeah, there was no internet really, and not in that sense. We're like, "Oh shit, Danko's playing!"
Yeah,
so we were like, "Let's go!" And at that point, Ian had exited the band, and so we were like, "He was your connection, right?" Like, we had never, my brother and I had never talked to you or corresponded with you, but we were like, "Well, you know who Puny Human is because you guys had correspondence." So we're like, "Well, we're just gonna go and introduce ourselves."
Yeah, and I was kind of taken aback, but then I was like, "Guys, I think it's starting to happen. Word's getting around."
Two guys came down and said they liked the show.
It was hilarious. Yeah. But then we played a show with you guys,
Human, and the Blue Van, right?
I think so. Yeah.
And Mercury Lounge.
And it was it was a great time. And then every time we go to New York, you guys would be there. And then there was more of a connection and a communication. Mm-hmm. And then finally, like, I knew you guys were working in television and you guys threw our song on a bumper once or twice.
Oh yeah, maybe, I was doing. Yeah. I did because we had my. For people who don't know, Josh and I have a production company, and over the years we did varying things from production to graphics packages,
freelance
for
editing,
MTV, and directing music videos. We directed a ton of music videos in the 90s for like all the New York hardcore bands, Sick of It All, and War. We did the only Warzone video.
Did you ever see our Napalm Death video?
We did a Napalm Death video.
No.
Yeah.
Was it?
Or Breathe to Breathe.
Did you do an Unsane video too?
Yeah, two Unsane videos. We edited the one with all the skate bales.
Yes.
And then we directed Sick, the one after that.
Okay.
But yeah, we shot Napalm Death on 16mm at CB's.
At CB's, yeah.
And then they wanted CBGB's. To edit in all these Faces of Death clips along with it. And that was the video.
Yeah.
That's great, man. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Because I remember when we uploaded the Full of Regret song onto our website, and immediately, I can't remember which one of you guys, immediately goes, "My brother and I want to do the video for this."
Yeah.
And we had already kind of, you know, penciled in our friend to do the video, but it wasn't working out scheduled. Like, it just wasn't happening. But we're very loyal, you know? So it was just like, oh, God, what are we going to do? We got this... the crisis. And then we were on a plane, I think, to South by Southwest, and Jason just said, look, the bottom line is it's not happening. He doesn't have his ducks in a row. So it's not like we're pulling the rug out from him and under him. He's not going to lose anything.
So let's let these guys do it and tell them they have a week to get their ducks in a row.
Exactly.
In LA from New York. Like
so when you guys came to the table, we just gave the project to you and just said okay, and then you guys came back with like the thing that just blew us away. We had nothing because you guys are friends with Elijah Wood.
Yeah well, and you're friends with Lemmy and Mike Watt, and our producer at the time knew Selma Blair, and so it just sort of was like
I remember you guys came to the table with Elijah, and I was like wow, what, that's amazing. And then
he was fans of you guys through us, because we had been friends, and he's a huge music nerd, as are the three of us, and we would just pass bands back and forth, and we had given him Born a Lion at some point.
Yeah.
And we were like, dude, and he was like, oh, these guys are awesome, you know.
So I didn't believe he was gonna, I knew you guys were friends, so it wasn't like a name out of the air that you pulled.
Right.
Like, we're gonna get George Clooney on this, guys. Yeah. Don't worry.
He loves it.
So it was a realistic name.
But that was also the first thing, you know, we were friends. We weren't like industry friends. We were friends.
Yes.
So that was the first project that we had like approached him to say, you know what, let's actually work together. We do work in the same industry.
Which is a touchy thing amongst friends.
Of course. So, but when we pitched him the idea and we're like, no, you're going to be the bad guy
and cast everybody against type.
Like, this would be super fun. This sounds super fun.
Of course.
Do you want to carry a shotgun?
Yeah.
All day?
Yeah. A real shotgun, by the way.
The one thing about all the comments that I've read about them, they never like say, this isn't, Elijah. Like, they believed Elijah as the bad guy.
Yeah.
They really pulled it off. But then when, we started talking about, well, you know, you had this character for the bartender thing. And I think you...
Well, initially it was Lemmy, because you guys had called us and said, well, we're seeing Motorhead, like, we're friends with them, and we're going to be with them in South By, so we think we can get Lemmy.
That's right.
And we said, okay, we're gonna do a Lebowski thing.
Let's make him the dude.
Yeah, we're going to do a Lebowski cowboy thing, and Watt's going to be the...
No, Lemmy.
I mean, Lemmy's going to be the cowboy Sam Elliott character at the top and bottom. And you guys are like, yeah, I think we can get him to do that.
Yeah.
And then you called us after that, and you're like, yeah, he's down. He'll do it.
Yeah. And then in L.A., they were like, no, Lemmy's not going to read anything.
Yeah, Lemmy's not going to... He'll show up. But we don't know what he'll do or what,
you have
what
for
he'll
like
do.
An hour.
So that's when I had seen... I think I get Watt's, like, newsletters... And while we were in L.A. prepping, like 2 days before the video was going to shoot, I got the email that Watt was playing. So I said, Danko, you have to fucking email Watt or call him or whatever and ask him to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened. Because
he's in town.
I'm the worst for that. But I did it because you guys asked me and I was like,
Email with his number and you were like, just call him.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, so I called him, and he was like... This is how Mike Watt answers the phone. It goes, ring, and he just goes, Watt!
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, this is Josh, my friend at Danko's. Oh, hey, man, what's going on? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, sure. And then he goes, yeah, I'll be there. What do you want me to wear? I go, I want you to be you, man. Show up in some flannel and whatever, and just be Mike Watt.
Because I think I called him, and we talked about it. And then he started asking more stuff, and that's when I think I go, I'm not the director. I don't know what the fuck they got planned. So call him. Take it. Because I was already nervous about it. Because he was kind of, you know, naturally hemming and hawing.
Of course.
But the guy was totally interested in it.
Yeah.
It was, and I remember you, like, okay, so Lemmy's coming down, Elijah's there, Selma's there. But when Watt showed up, the both of you were just like, that's Mike Watt.
Absolutely.
I mean, your enthusiasm for Mike Watt was quite noticeable.
Yeah.
But
we had, so for our, you know, the general thing that we pitched you for the video was we want to make a movie trailer for a movie that doesn't exist. Because for the 1 week, literally, you called us on a Wednesday and we had to be in LA and shoot the following Friday. So in order to get around budget, and not that it was a super low budget, but, you know, given that we didn't have, you know, we couldn't spend huge location fees and things, but we needed to get a lot of stuff, the movie trailer idea gives us the ability to kill continuity.
Yes.
So we can just, you can literally, every scene or every shot can be anywhere, and it doesn't matter because it's a movie trailer.
Yeah.
But I don't know how we settled on it, but we were like, we need to do, I think because we knew we were going to have Lemmy and we knew he wouldn't necessarily act in it, although that's weirdly what he ended up doing, we decided to make him a narrator because we assumed that we may not even get him on camera.
Yeah.
So we'll do his voice. So we were like, what's the best kind of narration? And then we both settled on the cowboy from Lebowski. So we downloaded the Lebowski script and took the opening monologue about Lebowski and the ending monologue about Lebowski and just changed the words where he says cowboy to things describing you.
Yeah. From song titles.
From song titles. So anyone who hasn't
Mango
seen
Kid.
It, word or dialogue, actually the entire dialogue is made up of entirely Danko album titles, song titles, or lyrics.
Yeah.
Every one of them. So, but we made sure that it worked if you didn't know that. But if you did know it, it would be a nod to like, okay, these guys get it, and it's a Danko thing.
Yeah. Right.
Sometimes tight constraints like that just make you have to focus and get it done because you know you only have these 2 days.
Yeah.
So you just hopefully get a little burst of creative freedom to say, you can't overthink it.
No.
Right? You're like, this is what we have, this is what we do,
and
let's just blow it out.
And we also managed to get a killer DP, Brandon Trost, who at the time, I think, had done MacGruber and Halloween 2 and Crank 2. And we had met him.
He hadn't done MacGruber yet.
He hadn't?
No.
Oh, maybe he was about to do that. But he was a fan of Puny Human through Jim Rhoda from Fireball. And so when we called him, we were like, well, he's like the biggest DP that we know in, and he's a fan of Danko, right? So we're like, let's call Brandon. Also, because we need to crew up out there and he'll just be able to call a few dudes. And, you know, since then he's gone on to do like
all the Seth Rogen movies.
Since that, This Is the End. The Interview, This Is the End.
We did This Is the End.
Yeah.
Keep talking about American Sharks.
Yeah.
Which I've heard because of you guys.
Yes. Yeah. If you're listening to this podcast, go to Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you like to get your musical products buy the American Sharks record.
The greatest thing is, like, I always make mention of, like, oh, yes, you know, I always have friends who turn me on to bands, and, you know, we turn each other on to bands, and you two are on that short list of people who have turned me on to some great bands over the years.
And vice versa. I think USA out of Vietnam, is it that?
They're on our label. I think I did. You told me about that. Did I?
Yeah. Or I saw you tweet about it or something, and I was like, oh, I'm going to check that out because you said that.
And then I think when you guys told me about American Sharks and Netherlands, I told you about Admiral Sir Cloudsy.
Shovel. Yeah, which is crazy.
Which is like, I went on a fucking, I could have been their fucking,
their
publicist.
Their dad or something. Just waving the flag for them.
Yeah.
And I told you guys, I emailed, because they're on Rise Above, I emailed Lee Dorian and I just said, how's it going, Lee? I've written in a while. Admiral Sir Cloudsy Shovel fucking rule. They're fucking amazing. See you later. Have a nice day. And then I think he told the band, and the band reached out to us.
Well, and we named the Ralph Macchio character Lee Dorian.
Yeah, he knows.
Right.
Yeah.
But I thought, remember he said, I thought his only response to you about that was, it's one R instead of two or something.
Did he say two that? R's. Oh, no. Oh, man.
Because that was a mixture of Dorian Gray.
Yes.
Because Macchio just never ages. Never and then we were like, well, if it's Dorian, then we're going to make him Lee Dorian. Because
the greatest Dorian.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's always a tie-in with our videos, because there's another video that we did called Take Me Home, and I'm wearing a Rise Above shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So it just continued with this weird connection we have with this label.
Yeah.
Which I love. I love that label so much. I mean,
Chevy.
Yes. That's
an old one.
Yeah, that's an oldie but goodie. And
have you heard Church of Misery? Have you heard Orchid?
Yeah, they got really popular on that last record they put out.
Yeah.
But I was onto them on the record before.
Yeah.
They're really good. There's a lot of these kind of Sabbath-y, kind of Captain Beyond Sabbath-y bands coming out of the woodwork now.
When we went to see American Sharks last time, they were playing a band over the PA, and we were all like, who is this? It sounds really good. And I was like, I'll try Shazam on my phone. Yes. Clearly it'll pick up an obscure 70s band. And everyone's like, bullshit. So I was like, I don't know, let's just try it. And I tried it, and it totally did. And it just banned Pagan Altar with their record Dull Knife.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And it's really good.
Pagan Altar.
Yeah.
There's one. I mean, sometimes you guys throw so much at me at once, and I'm like, yeah, I'll get to it. And then I think I remember emailing one of you guys going, fucking Da Navarro. Yeah. And then you guys reply going, well, I told you that last year, you asshole.
Yeah. I played it for you when we were in Toronto shooting the documentary interview.
Oh.
I was like, check these guys out. Because we saw them. I had never heard them. And we saw them open for Witchcraft on Witchcraft's first tour in Brooklyn. Oh, actually, we saw Witchcraft both nights. They played Brooklyn and Mercury Lounge. And Danava opened, or Danava, or however you say it.
Yeah, okay.
In Brooklyn, and I was like, oh, these guys are pretty good, but I don't know. I don't know. They're so busy that I think if you don't know the record, that seeing them live, it's sort of like...
Confusing.
Yeah. The record kind of focuses you.
Yeah. And then a friend of mine was like, oh, have you heard that, the first Danava record or whatever? And I was like, oh, yeah, I saw
it. It was Bongiorno, I think.
No, it was Matt Cutler.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, I don't know, I'll check it out. And then I was like, holy shit, this record's awesome. And then I played it for you, and you were like, "Oh yeah, this is cool." And then, like,
yeah, I was like, "Yeah, that's cool."
2 months later, like, "Dude, that record's awesome." You're like, "What?"
Well yeah, because I loaded up, like, you guys gave me some records and bands to check out, so I loaded it up in the car, and I was just driving around.
Yeah.
And then the Denava record came on by second track. I think there's some crazy horn section that they threw on. That got great. I was like, "What the fuck is this?" Yeah. And then I was on.
They got back together and made like another record.
They were following us a couple of dates when we were in Europe. May of last year.
Oh man,
they're playing the same venue we played in Portugal, in Porto.
Yeah, I would like to see them now. I listen to both of their records a lot.
Yeah, it's brilliant stuff, man. And then there's I can't even go through the list of all the bands that you guys have thrown my way over the years.
I know everybody says Spotify is the downfall of music and, you know, whatever. But for $10 a month, I can put whatever I want on my phone, and I'm totally fine with that. But their Discover feature, there's actually a ton of weird, obscure rock and metal on there that bands I've never heard of, and you go to Discover and it'll be like, oh, you like Orchid, you might like Astro Monkey or whatever. We found some, or what was that band?
Ape Machine
or something like that, and you're like, holy shit, this is insane.
Yeah.
We've all these bands like Kamchatka and Brutus.
Kamchatka, and that's Pear from he just sent me a Kamchatka care package.
Yeah.
I just got it at home.
It's like Kamchatka is like if Stevie Ray Vaughan was in a stoner rock band.
Yeah.
And Stevie Ray Vaughan might be Pear under that would be the Stevie Ray Vaughan element.
You know Stone Axe?
I've heard the name.
I don't know where they're from, but they're
Boston. Well, there's two Stone Axes.
Yeah,
one from the 70s, and there's not like a recent one.
Okay. But the recent one, they have two records, and their second record's a double, I think.
I saw a dude on the boat with a stone with that blueberries shirt.
But they're weird because they're really good, but they have this ability to kind of, you know, because all these bands kind of, they want to be some band from the 70s, right? Yeah. They want to ape some kind of, that's just their vibe. These guys can do, like, they do a Cream cover, the Slobber, that's
exact.
The guy's vocal style can change. They have a Thin Lizzy song that you would swear is an unreleased Thin Lizzy track.
Have you heard the new Audrey Horne stuff? It's Lizzy.
Who's that?
This band from Norway. Mm-hmm. We played a few shows with them maybe 4 years ago, and they're doing kind of like a heavy rock vibe. I mean, I'm not doing them justice, but they just put out a new album. And in the video is the dude from Amon Amarth, the singer dude, is the guest guy, and there's all these Muppets. So people are like talking about it and stuff. And so you hear the song and it's like, holy fuck. I think it's called Out of the City is the name of the song. It's fucking amazing. And I even tweeted them. I'm like, holy shit. Like, because I think there was talk of us touring together back in 11, and it just never worked out. And I think one of the dudes is an Enslaved. The guitarist. Oh, weird. Yeah.
Have you found that Twitter is actually a really good communication tool for like meeting people?
Yes.
It's crazy,
it's
right?
It's crazy. I've met so many people that way.
Yeah. But like actual meeting, and then you end up meeting them in person.
Instagram as well.
Yeah. When we did the I Believed in God video, we were like, you know, we always like to try and reach out to people to work with them, right? Because we like meeting new people, and especially actors and actresses. It's nice.
Well, it's always nice to have a little friendly, you know, a familiar face in a video. It helps.
Right, but it's nice to work with people that you want to work with and to have a reason to reach out to somebody instead of saying, hey, one day we should work together and say, hey, I want to work with you on something. Here's something we're doing. Are you interested? You know, we had been sort of following Zelda Williams' career, Robin Williams' daughter, for a while, just because we sort of saw some stuff with her and we're like intrigued. And my brother...
there was a great piece online that when Nintendo re-released Zelda, because apparently she was
I think you gotta press hold it.
She was
named
he named her after the Zelda video game because he and her mother were huge Zelda fans. So Nintendo did this whole piece with them sitting together talking about the video game and how much they love it, and it's just a really sweet piece, but she's just got this cool quality. I mean, as we come to find out, we've been friends. She's just a super nice, again, super nice and and interesting. But yeah, I was like, we should try and get her. And I just tweeted to her, hey, do you want to make a fun monster, movie together? And she responded, I don't know, that sounds kind of interesting. And she followed me. And then we direct messaged for a little bit. And then we exchanged emails. And then she said yes. Yeah. Just all from Twitter.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, in bands and music, it's happened too. A few times. Like, sometimes I'll go, I want to... Like, Caton DePena from Hyrax. I've always thought he was, like, the coolest guy.
Right.
Like, just, you know. So it took a bit of time, but I, like, tweeted him a couple times going, you're awesome, man. I want to love you, dude. And I was like, well, at least I'm verified right now. And it won't be out of the blue.
Yeah.
And nothing. Nothing. Yeah. I must have done it 2-3 times. And then one day on Instagram, I uploaded something. He goes, this is, yeah, cool, brother. Yeah, man. I'm like, holy shit. Caton DePena. Hey, man, it's so great to see you. I love you guys. And then I was like, ah. And then I took a photo of like a Hyrax record, just sitting at home listening to, Hyrax. Hyrax.
As I do in my morning, my coffee.
Yeah. And he's like, old school, brother, right on. So that was one of the more memorable ones. And, then a couple of years after we did the trilogy with you guys, Elijah did a WTF episode. So I reached out to Elijah. Great episode.
Talked about a bunch of bands that aren't around anymore that have turned into other things. Like I saw Jimmy Bauer last night, and when we first met him, he was in after I Hate God, he was in a band called Mystical Crew of Clearlight.
Yeah, you guys were talking about that band yesterday,
which I really dug. Like, we didn't know that he was in a new band, and we played a show at Continental with High on Fire.
He was playing guitar.
He was playing guitar in that band. And and Ross, I forget Haynes? His last name.
No, it's
not Haynes. This guy Ross, this big giant dude from New Orleans, with from their whole crew, and he was playing. He had a fucking B3,
had a real B3 they were on stage,
and like they were this crazy instrumental,
amazing. That sounds band. Amazing.
They were really good, awesome. And it was us, and I think it was like one of High on Fire's first gigs. I don't know. It was a. Sounds retardedly nostalgic, but New York in like 98 to like 2003 was a really good good scene of like the bands that were happening there, like Atomic Bitchwax. And
well, that's funny because we were Fu Manchu fans, and then when they split like Nebula, and we were like, oh cool, then it's gotta have a similar vibe, a little more jammy. And so they were playing at Coney Island High in Manhattan, and I didn't know any of the other bands that were playing. We got there a little early, and somebody was like, oh, there's a band before Nebula called Atomic Bitchwax. Mm-hmm. Never, had no clue, didn't know who they were.
Did Chrome Locust play that show, too?
That was
Queens of the Stone Age show.
Yeah. No, we didn't know any of the other bands. We just went early and like, all right, well, we'll see this band, and then if they suck, we'll go to the bar or whatever. Yeah. And they came out and... blew our minds so
like,
hard that
shit.
We left before Nebula even went on.
Yeah,
I was like, there's nothing that's gonna be better than what I just saw. So before I dilute what I just saw in my brain with something else, I'm just gonna go home.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty insane.
That's kind of what it was for us, maybe. Well, at least for me last night with High on Fire.
Oh
yeah,
dude.
It's probably gonna be the show of the boat.
We were just like, well, it's not gonna get any better than that.
Yeah,
I mean,
small
no
room, like
50
people, just loud as shit.
But in a room, I think I leaned over to somebody. I said, "This is like if High on Fire was in a scene in Casino."
Yeah, I think you told. Yeah.
It's like this.
You
weird,
told me that
this weird mirrored room where clearly I was saying that Matt Pike last night, like. We were talking about his pedals or something, and I was like, it was really loud, but it sounded really good. And Desi was saying that the box the band is in while they're playing sounded really good, weirdly, for this mirrored ceiling and sort of
low stage.
Low stage. Yeah. I said, yeah, well, I'm sure they're normally used to, like, you know, electronic drums and, like, a keyboard and, like, you know, like a...
Yeah.
Wedding.
A cruise band. Yeah, like, not to denigrate cruise bands.
No, but they know the deal.
Yeah. My stepdad went on a cruise playing drums with Anne Murray, so it's not...
Whoa, that's pretty... As a Canadian, that's pretty heavy.
Yeah. But... That's. I assume that's the kind of music that's usually on a cruise.
Yeah, you know, like, that makes sense.
Like a Vegas band.
I'd love to see Anne Murray on that stage, the Starlight Room.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as she tonight does songs in the Starlight from Peach Room. Dragon.
Yeah, but it was amazing last night watching Matt Pike like so close.
And yeah,
and when they started, no one was. There was like 15 of us.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's in those high armed strip club. Chairs.
Yeah, and I remember because like they were kind of like, no one was in the front.
Yeah, yeah. There was 20 feet easily of just empty dance floor between
and we
them.
We had these comfortable seats, and the first crazy guy with a sports jersey on, he was a little drunk. He gets right in front of Matt Pike, which the band loves, right?
Yeah,
they want that.
Yeah, you saw Matt lit up.
Yeah, and I was sitting there going, sit down. I'm watching High on Fire. Get the fuck out of the way. Get the fuck out of the way. And then everyone started to slowly make their way to the stage.
Yeah, I went straight to the front.
This is bullshit. Yeah. I can't see Matt.
I found a really good seat right behind where the people were, and I could look up into the mirrored ceiling. They were upside down, but I could see them because the stage was so low. If you weren't close, you couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
So I just sat in my seat with Stu, and we just watched the ceiling.
Yeah.
Bounce.
I walked right up front.
You
I was
one
standing
of the guys
right in
too.
Front of Matt,
yeah.
Right next to the jersey guy, the sports jersey guy. And it was awesome. And Matt said at some point, he's like, I appreciate everyone standing up here, even though you can't hear my vocals, because literally the speakers were on the floor.
Right. Behind.
The PA was on the floor, like now behind us.
Yeah.
But it sounded like you don't, again, since those earlier shows, you don't get to see a band like High on Fire that close, and literally it's like being in their rehearsal room.
Yeah, it was all stage volume.
I was
there's nothing going
I was
the PA
8 feet
except for a kick
I was
drum
probably a, 8 to 9 feet from Matt's cabinets.
Yeah,
and like to get that his tone like in your face without amazing. A microphone in between it is it doesn't happen that much anymore.
Yeah.
So it was as it shouldn't, because they should be playing really big, you know, places because they're great. But
I went up to Matt Pike while we were boarding, and I go, you're the band I want to see on this boat, you know. And by the way, you're super cool, dude. I remember we were on tour in Canada, and our tours crisscrossed with the Gigantour at that year.
Yeah.
I can't remember what year, but it was High on Fire was on In Flames, Children of Bodom, all these bands. And so they were all at the arena where they played. I think it was in Saskatoon. They were all the bands, except for Megadeth, were sharing a backstage area, this big backstage area. And, you know, all the bands are kind of like, it's done. Megadeth are about to go on stage, so all the bands are done. They're milling around. And High on Fire are on a small circular table, like a very, very small circular table. They're all around, cornered. They've got a little kind of blaster blasting AC/DC. There's a bottle of something. I think, I want to say Jack, but I don't know if it is. I can't remember. And Matt Pike's just sitting there smoking a cigarette, listening to AC/DC in the dressing room. And then he sees me and he goes, what's up? Yeah. And I was like, this guy rules. I love this guy. He's the coolest.
He's great.
Motherfucker in
he's
rock.
He's a super awesome guy.
Yeah.
They're all nice guys. Even
The ones I've met them individually, they don't remember. But they're all super cool.
Yeah. All right. On that note, we're going to go see Down.
Let's do it.
All right. Thanks.